I would encourage you this morning to be turning to Genesis 1. We're going to be in the first chapter of Genesis. I'm going to make it easy up front. We're just going to go to Genesis 1, and we're going to look at some things from that this morning as we begin. I want to say up front what a pleasure it is for me to be here and to be with you and to be a part of this series of lessons. I have looked forward to this now since the invitation has been extended, so I very much appreciate the elders offering this possibility for me to come. You know, over the past several years, when you've been invited to go different places, you really didn't know whether or not you were going to get to go. I've had meetings canceled, and we've had to cancel some of our own things that we have scheduled at College View in Florence. And so I'm just glad that this week appears to be in a positive way, and we appear to be making it happen, so I'm thankful for that. I've heard a lot of good things about this church for many years. This is the first time I think I've been here. But I've heard good things about the leadership, good things about the preaching, Jason and Andrew, and appreciate the good work that they do, as well as all of you. And I've gotten to meet some of you this morning already, and I look forward to meeting all of you. That might take a little time. That may not happen, but I would love to do that. I do want to tell you about one thing before I begin this morning. Something's happened to me this morning that's never happened to me before. I met a man this morning who graduated from high school with my dad. That's never happened to me in a meeting before. Brother J.C. Paget, he and his wife are here. He walked up to me this morning. He said, "I know your dad." Well, now that's not uncommon for somebody to know my dad, but for somebody to have graduated from high school with my dad, who graduated in Evergreen, Alabama in 1952. Now that's fairly uncommon. I don't get that very often. So I've already had my picture made with him, and I cannot wait this afternoon to call my dad and say, "Dad, you're never going to guess who I met today." I'm so excited about that. But I've gotten to see a lot of you, and I really do appreciate that. There are several of you here who have been a part of my past, and I'm so grateful for you, and I'm so grateful for you being here this morning and just wanting to think about spiritual things. I don't know if it's important for you to get to know me really in some way. Just a quick bio of me: I'm an Arkansas boy. That means I'm a Razorback. I don't know if that's good or bad. For the past several years, everybody loves me because everybody beats me all the time. But maybe that's turning. But nonetheless, I spent my wife, Beth, and I, she's from Florence. I met her 35 years ago, and we met in Tampa. And I worked down there for 32 years at Florida College for a long time, doing about everything there is to do down there. And about eight, 9 years ago, the elders at College U called me and said, "Would you consider moving here and working with us?" And I'm glad I did. The past 8 or 9 years have been very, very good to me. And I've loved working there and continue to work there and grateful for opportunities that I have. But I'm glad to be with you for these several days. I'm staying at a great place. I'm staying at the Spring Hill Suites, which there's a Buffalo Wild Wings next door. And more important than that, there's a Whataburger 3 miles away. So I'm in good shape. I'm good to go for the rest of the time. But anyway, it really is a pleasure to be with you, and I look forward to getting to know all of you as we can. I have entitled this particular series, "If Heaven Matters, Then," and I'm going to make some statements about that in every lesson. And I think these lessons will be important to all of us for this reason. I think heaven matters. I think heaven matters to you. I don't think if it didn't matter, I don't think you'd be here this morning. So I think it matters. And if it matters, then hopefully these lessons that I want to talk to you about will be important as well. And this morning I want us to talk about this issue of that there are some questions that you need to ask. There are some questions that all of us need to ask that may not be the questions you may be thinking about. But I think this is in my judgment, this is one of the most fundamental lessons you could hear, I could hear, that we could all think about together. So that's why I really want to present this lesson this morning for all of us to think about. And the last I checked, there are 7.9 billion people in the world. That's a lot of folks. About 330 million of those 7.9 billion live in this country. And about 5 million of those 330 million live in this state. And about 15,000 of those people who live in this state live in this town. And I want to suggest to you this morning, my friends, that most of those people have no idea who they are. They have no idea who they are. It is a fundamental problem. And I believe if we don't know who we are, we have no idea how to act and how to deliver ourselves really in our lives. And if we don't know who we are, if you don't really know who you are, then how are you going to live your life to the best possible advantage? That's a big problem. That's not just a big problem. That is a huge problem. Most people don't know who they are because they don't ask the right questions. And when they ask the right questions, they don't go to the right source. And I'm fully convinced that most of those 7.9 billion people don't have a clue as to who they are. And it may be this morning that you don't. You may be simply living your life because, well, this is the way I was raised. This is what I do. These are my people. This is what I'm about. But if you really don't fundamentally know who you are, I'm going to suggest to you that your life is not going to be what it ought to be. When I walked in this morning, several of you, and may I just tell you how appreciative I am, and encourage you and tell you that many of you spoke to me. You didn't wait for me to speak to you. You spoke to me. That says a whole lot about this church. I just want to tell you. You need to keep doing that. But I really do appreciate that. But when I spoke to you or spoke to me, probably the thing that we shared was our name. I may have asked, who are you? Or you may have asked, who are you? And we gave you our name. I gave you my name, or you gave me your name. That's not really who we are. That just distinguishes us from maybe somebody else here. Your name only changes, it just makes you distinctive in terms of what people may call you, but that's not really who you are. I want you to think about that this morning. If I ask you this morning, who are you, and you can't tell me your name, how are you going to respond to that? Well, I want you to think about that this morning by answering what I think are the big questions. There are what I believe are three of the biggest questions. They are. I don't think this is one of the things where I say this may be the case. I think this is the case. Without exception, I would tell you this morning that the three questions that I want to call to your mind this morning are the most important questions that you can ask, and they're also the most important questions anybody can ask. Consider this scenario. Consider the fact that you may be on an island somewhere by yourself, and you don't know anything. Now, I realize that's a hypothetical situation. But just imagine yourself on an island somewhere, and you don't know anything, but you have the ability to reason, and you have the ability to think. What are the questions that you're going to ask yourself? Well, let me give you what I believe very obviously are the three questions. The first thing you're going to ask is, who am I? Now remember, you don't know anything, but you ask yourself the question, who am I? And I think the second question, or it may even be the first question, but you may say, who put me here? Or how did I get here? And then the third question that I think is equally important to the previous two is this, why am I here? Now I just want you to think with me. Can you think of any more important question for you or anyone else to ask this morning than those three questions? Who am I? Who put me here, and why am I here? I'll tell you how important those questions are. Everybody asks those questions. Now, they may not think about it the same way you and I do this morning, but everybody asks those questions. Back in the early 80s, when I was doing a lot of traveling all over the country, and I stayed with some folks in Folsom, California. And as I would typically do when I would stay in their homes at night, if there was books on the bookshelf or whatever, I might pick one up and look at it. And I happened to be staying with some folks there that night. Their daughter was away at college, and I was staying in her room. And as I began to get ready for bed, I was just looking at her bookshelf, and I pulled a book off her bookshelf that said it was entitled The Big Questions. I found out later it was a textbook in the California Community College system. And every student who was a part of the California Community College system took this philosophy class. And so the title itself on the spine just interested me, The Big Question. So I pulled it off. And really, basically what it gave were several different options about life. And it gave the answers, at least multiple option answers, for how a person might answer these very questions. And so I pulled it off and I began to look at it. And when I finished, I thought, it makes for an interesting point. So I asked the people I was staying with, could I take this book? And they said, sure you can. And I Now I can't find it. It's out of my library somewhere, but I can't find a lot of things in my library, but it's there somewhere. This is a picture of the cover of it. But I thought it was interesting because it was asking, it was a textbook that was explaining life to these college students in California. It gave answers to these questions as well. The problem was it didn't give the truth. Now, it would talk about God as a possible option, but it would not give the truth. And so, what I want you to think about today is, how do you answer those questions? How do you answer those questions? What does the Bible say about who you are? Now, I know most of you, if not all of you sitting in this audience, you're going, I know what the Bible says about me. I believe you do. But I want to reinforce it this morning. And I want this lesson to reinforce the lessons that will follow, because in my judgment, if we don't get this point, there's no reason for us to pursue anything else. As a matter of fact, it seems to me this is where we ought to start. I'm all about Jesus. I'm all about obeying Jesus. I'm all about listening to Jesus and listening to who? To His ambassadors, those apostles and those holy prophets who wrote. I'm all about that, just like you're all about that. But I believe it's even more fundamental than that. I believe if we don't understand who we are foundationally, then Jesus doesn't matter to us. What difference does it make unless we're obligated by our Creator to honor what His Son says? And so I want you to think about that with me this morning. And it starts in Genesis 1, where Moses would say, he would utter the words of God when he said, he recorded, then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. In my judgment, the most misunderstood words in Scripture are found in the first three chapters of the Bible. I believe if a person understands Genesis 1, 2, and 3, that they can get Genesis 1 through Revelation 22. The problem is, most people of this 7.9 billion, and we too, if we're not careful, don't get that information. So what does this say? Who does this say you are? I'll tell you who it says you. You are a person, you're a human being made in the image of God. And I'll tell you something else it says. You're either a man or a woman. Now you tell me how much that's needed today. How clear, how much more clear could it be? God has made every single person in His image, and He has made them male and female. And in my judgment, if you don't get that, the rest of it doesn't matter. And if you miss that, then heaven doesn't matter. So why is this important? Here's the question. What does it mean to be made in the image of God? An image or a likeness? Most places I go and preach, I can say, none of you know my dad, but that won't work today. So, JC, just turn your ears off for just a minute. Probably none of you, but him maybe, know my dad. Do you think my dad is handsome? Yeah. I'm just sharing that with you. I think he's very handsome. I'm like my dad, right? I know. Let me ask a fairer question. Do you think my dad's tall? He's pretty tall. He's about a half inch shorter than me, but he's pretty tall. And I'm generally taller than a lot of people, not everybody. But there's interesting things about my father and me. We do things similarly. I'm not going to share everything with you. This is probably more information than you want to know. But there's a place on the back of my leg that I've never been able to grow hair. I'm not going to show it to you. But if you saw my dad and you asked him to roll up his pant legs, you'd be shocked. He doesn't have hair there either. It's an amazing thing. There are other things that I'm not going to go into any more detail about. But the fact is that my dad and I are similar in a lot of ways. But I'll tell you this, I'm not my dad. He's not me. But we are very, very similar, but we're not the same. I am like my dad, but I'm not my dad. I am like God, but I am not God. And what we must be clear about is that we know the difference. And we, I think, do know the difference. But what's important is the parts that we are like God. We've got to make sure that we understand that. I have a spiritual side. Being made in the image of God means that I have a spirit. I have a spiritual side. There is a part of me that's like God in that kind of way. And I think those things, in some ways, are very hard for us. When Paul talks about the inner man, some of those things are difficult for us. And part of that's because we can't see the inner man. We can see the outer man, but we don't see the inner man. But that's a part of us that is like God. So we have this spiritual side. And part of being made in God's image is that we understand, or we can understand, what is right and wrong because He understands. Not only does He understand, He defines it. He dictates what right and wrong is. And because we're moral beings, we have the capability to understand what that is. And we have that capability because we can reason and because we can think. And here's where it gets shaky. Here's where the problem lies with most people. Like God, He has given us this ability to reason and think, and that part of all of us needs to flourish. The problem with most people is they don't want to think about that. God's given them the ability to do that, but they don't want to think about that. Every human being must deal with this ability to think and to reason if heaven matters. Because what God tells us is that you can read what I have revealed to you, and if you'll think about that, and if you'll use your reasoning abilities about that, then you can figure out what it is that I want. And that will help you understand why heaven ought to matter. I want to share something with you that I think is, again, I think it's critical. It's not going to be profound. It's not going to be something that you don't know, but I believe it's something that a lot of people don't think about. And I want to share it with you from Psalm 8. I want you to turn your Bible to the Old Testament book of Psalms, and I want you to look at chapter 8 with me. This is a Psalm of David. I know that doesn't surprise you. Most of them are. It's a Psalm of David. David was a lot of things. David was a warrior. David was a king. David was an adulterer. David was a liar. In a real sense, David was a murderer. David was a musician. I asked this question several years ago to some kids. I said, well, tell me something that David was. And this one little boy is about 5 years old, said he was a magician. It kind of stunned me from him. I said, I couldn't believe, first of all, that he knew what the word magician was. He said he was a magician. I said, well, tell me about that. He said he played the harp. He was a magician. I said, you mean a musician? He said, that's what I said. He was a magician. I said, okay, well, we'll go with it. David was a lot of things. One of those things that he was is he was a shepherd. That's one of the ways, at least I think we're most familiar with. And when you get to Psalm 8, when you listen, and we're going to read a little part of Psalm 8 in just a minute. When you listen to Psalm 8, I can imagine David being out on a Judean hillside at night. I can see him tending his sheep, and I'll tell you what, being a shepherd when he was a shepherd on a Judean hillside when he lived, he had a lot of time to think. If that were us, we'd be looking at our phone and we'd be doing all sorts of things different than what he was doing. But I'll tell you what he did. He meditated. He thought. And part of what I believe he said is found in Psalm 8. I want you to listen to this. Listen to what he said. He said, when I consider your heavens and the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you're mindful of him? And the son of man that you visit him, For you've made him a little lower than the angels, and you've crowned him with glory and honor, and you have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands, and you've put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the seas. I don't know if it just happened when he was out shepherding. I'm not even sure it happened when he was shepherding. But it seems to me what he's saying is, when I look into the heavens and I see the works that you've done, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, when I look at all that, God, here's my question. What is man that you're mindful of him? And the Son of Man that you visit him, Hebrew idioms to say, what is it about me that means something to you? You ever ask that question? Don't you think that's an important question for you and me to ask? Listen, my brother and sister, you're critically important to God. He knows you by name. He sent his Son to die for you. I mean, And on and on and on it goes. And yet sometimes we don't even stop to take the time to think about what that means. I'm going to talk a little bit about more about that tonight in tonight's lesson. But David said, when I give deliberate thought, I love that word consider, when I consider. You know what it means to consider? To consider means you give something deliberate thought. When I started dating my wife, first two or three times we went out, we'd go to the movie or we'd go out to eat or something else, and we'd spend a few hours together, and I'd take her home, and I'd go back to my apartment, and I'd turn on the television and do what I did. About the fourth time we went out, we talked a little bit longer. The conversation got a little deeper, so I went back to my house, and instead of turning on the TV, I kind of sat there. And I thought, you know what? It's just kind of going pretty well. I kind of like this. I ask her out, and she says yes. And when she gets in the car, it appears as though she wants to be with me. It's kind of a neat kind of deal. And so we dated a little bit longer, and we dated for several months. And the more we dated, the more I found out that I was considering what it was that might be if she and I were to maybe spend a little bit more time together, a little bit more in-depth time together. And as I began to date her even more, I found out that she would go home, and she was thinking the same thing. And so after about a year and a half, we were both considering everything. And one night, she asked me to marry her, and I said yes. Well, thank you. It wasn't quite that way, but you get the point. But she and I both had to spend some deliberate time thinking about it. It's because that was a real important thing. And my friend, we need to be thinking about real important things. And David said, I'm thinking about it. God, here's my question. Why do you care about me? I'm going to tell you what, my friends. One of the things that keeps me going in my life is because I know the God of heaven cares about me. And he cares about you. And if you and I don't get that, our life will not be what it needs to be. And in this particular discourse, David says, I am considering all of that. And what he was considering is something that is life-changing. Now, let me share what I think in this text he is saying that he's considering. I think David is saying, I'm thinking about all these things that you've made. Some things he states specifically, some things he alludes to, some things he alludes to. The first thing he talks about, I think, is he talks about the stars. And I guarantee you David was seeing stars. He was sitting out on that hillside looking up, and he saw all sorts of stars. And here's his question. There's a star, and there's me. What's the difference? Let me ask you a question this morning. What can a star do? A star either burns or burns up. That's all it's doing. Now, you may say, well, a star can fall. I get all that. But fundamentally, all a star can do is either burn or burn up, fundamentally. I want to ask you a question. Does any of the credit go to the star? When a star burns brightly, does somebody go to the star and say, hey, you're doing a good job tonight. Keep that up. You're doing great. Does any of that ever happen? No. Or when the star falls or when a star burns up, does anybody go to the star and say, you're sorry. Get out of here. Does that ever happen? No. What happens to a star? Star just does what nature tells star to do. And who tells nature what to do? God. But the credit nor the discredit ever goes to the star, because the star is not responsible to God. God determines what the stars do. Or how about a flower? What can a flower do? Well, a flower can bloom. Flower can die. Flower can wilt. Flower can do several different things. But the credit and the discredit never goes to the flower, because the flower has no ability to determine what the flower does. Now, there are several factors in whether or not the flower blooms or dies, but it's not the flower's issue. It's nature's issue. And who determines that? That's God. So let me go to a final thought in reference to what I think David's thinking about. David's comparing himself to all these things that he mentions here. And then he talks about all these animals. This is about the best picture of a puppy I could find. And I love dogs. Cats, that's another story, but I really love dogs. What can a dog do? Well, you say a dog can run. Dog can walk. Dog can jump. Dog can bark. Dog can sleep. Dog can eat. And on and on and on it goes. Dogs are different than flowers and stars. What else can a dog do? A dog can make other dogs. A male dog and a female dog together can make little puppies. And when they do, there's no thought given to that. Not really, no thought. Because dogs can't think. Dogs act on urges. Dogs do what dogs do. And many human beings do exactly what dogs do. They act on their urges. There are a whole lot of folks in this 7.9 billion people who simply do what they want to do. And when they do, they act like dogs. And when you do what a dog does without giving any thought to the difference between you and a dog, you act like a dog. Now, I want you to think about that. And tell me if that's not something that all of these 7.9 billion people, including you and me, need to hear. The problem with humanity is we're all acting like we're not human beings, because we don't understand that we're made in God's image, and we simply do what we want to do. We're going to talk about that Tuesday night. Who does Vladimir Putin think he is? Who do a lot of people think they are? Just to move on some urge that they have, or think in their minds that they're bigger or better than somebody else. No, we're all the same. I don't care where you live. I don't care what color your skin is. I don't care whether you have money or don't have money. We're all the same. We're all made in the image of God. And we, like David, ought to ask, what's the difference in me and a dog? And David says, I get it. I'm going to tell you what, if anybody knew what it meant to act like a dog, it was David. And then he changed his mind. And then he did what a lot of us need to do. He repented and basically said, Lord, cleanse me. Make me what I ought to be. And so when you get... And when I get the fact that we're made in the image of God and we have to act differently, when we understand that, then our life becomes what I think it ought to be. So that's why this idea of being made in God's image and understanding who we are becomes so important. I just want to mention in close, I want to mention three things that I think ought to just stand out to us. And these things ought to strike us in everything that we do. First of all, it's this. We all have a relationship with God. I'm not talking about a special relationship that we have with Him in terms of our obedience to the gospel. That's another matter. That's another lesson. I'm talking about the fact that we have a relationship with Him because we're made in His image. Do you know how many people are made in the image of God? You know the answer, right? Everybody. Nobody came to your mother when she was giving birth to you and said, okay, listen, you're about to give birth to this child, and once this child is born into the world, you got 30 seconds. You can either have him be made in the image of God or you can have him not be made in the image of God. It's your call. Nobody ever has that question because nobody has that right. You're made in the image of God whether you like it or not. That's a relationship every single person has. And every single person needs to know that, don't you think? But how many people do you know even have a clue about that? Every single person this morning needs to know this one thing. You are a human being who's made in the image of God. And you have a relationship with Him. And I'll tell you what that means. You have a responsibility to Him. If you have a relationship with anybody, you have a responsibility. I know a lot of people who are fathers to children. They don't want to be. They want the relationship. Oh, yeah, I'm a dad. Let me ask you a question. Do you fulfill that responsibility? Well, you know, I'm not very good at that. You know what God calls people who have relationships and don't accept responsibility? You know what God calls that? He calls that person a sinner. A sinner. A person who's unwilling. You want the relationship, but you don't want to fulfill responsibility. Let me tell you something this morning. If you're a husband and you don't want to do what a husband ought to do, you're a sinner. If you don't want to fulfill the obligation of being a husband, then don't get married. If you're a woman and you want to be married, but you're unwilling to fulfill your obligation as a wife and possibly a mother, if you don't want to do that, then don't get married. That's your right. But once you accept the responsibility or the relationship, you have the responsibility. And the problem with what we're talking about this morning is everybody's responsible to God. Everybody's going to stand before God, whether you want to or not. So let me tell you, you may say, well, you know what, Kenny, I'm not interested in standing before God. That's your prerogative, but I'm going to tell you what, you're going to. You're going to, whether you like it or not. Because you're made in His image. And because you have a relationship with Him, and because you are responsible to Him, here's the last part. Here's the kicker. You're accountable. You've got to give an account. The Hebrew writer said everybody's going to give an account. Everybody's going to stand before Him. Everybody is going to give an account. So I'm going to ask you this morning, does any of this change you? When somebody comes to me and says, would you study the Bible with me? Of course, that's my favorite thing to hear. Jason and Andrew understand that. You know, and all of you understand. When somebody said, would you, you know, it's like, oh, thank you, Lord. Somebody wants to study the Bible. And what I usually do, I say, I'd love to do that with you. I'd like to ask you to commit, if you'd study for 1 hour, five times. Just commit to that, and after that, we'll be done. Or if you want to continue, we can continue. And if they say yes, of course, I'm going to study with them whether they agree to that or not. But that's what I ask them to do. What I've shared with you this morning is the first lesson that I always talk to them about. We're not talking about Jesus. Not yet. But I want to ask you a question. If you, as an individual, if you, as a human being, understand what we talked about this morning, is Jesus going to be important to you? He's on the way to God. Yeah. How important? Critically important. But I want them to understand, you have a responsibility to the God of heaven because He created you. Now, these lessons tonight, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, all have to do with that responsibility. And so I hope that they will be beneficial and profitable to all of us. See, this morning, all of you, I think, who are here this morning, I think all of you understand that you're made in God's image. You understand that you have a responsibility to God. But now, for this audience, my question is, how responsible are you? How well have you fulfilled that responsibility? Is there something this morning that you may need to do to reattach or regain to, or to, in some words, accept that responsibility and do it even in a greater way? Well, that's why we're going to sing this song. And if you're sitting in this auditorium this morning, and as we're about to stand, if you say to yourself, you know what, Kenny, I've never done what I need to do, this would be a great time to do that. We'd love to help you. We could make you. I think I could put a gun to your head this morning and I'd baptize you in a few minutes, probably. But that wouldn't do you any good. It'd be against the law first, too. But you got to have a heart. Nobody's going to push you. Nobody's going to make you. But God simply asks you, do you understand who you are? And are you willing to serve me? Could we help you this morning? Do that? If we can, we ask you to come as we stand and as we sing.
All things are ready.